Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
Maybe age has made me more appreciative. Maybe it slowed me down so I actually notice these things. But I find as I grow older, the beauty of the world around me is positively striking. And it's everywhere. Now, in a lot of ways, this is an ugly world too. But even a fallen creation is still stunningly beautiful. The world around us, the natural world, the creatures around us. What science calls nature, they say it came from chance. They say that it's all random and that the survival of the fittest have given us somehow as icing on the cake, but really irrelevant and not with any real objective existence in itself, the beauty of the world. I reject that now that I notice more the beauty of the world. I think there's got to be an artist at work in this world to render such beauty. Joining us for the last half hour of this Friday afternoon's program, Dr. Jonathan Witt, we're going to talk about Charles Darwin's response to beauty, really his elimination of beauty from our vocabulary. Dr. Witt is Senior Fellow for the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, co-author of the books A Meaningful World and Traipsing into Evolution. He's also written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Darwin versus Beauty, Explaining Away the Butterfly. Dr. Witt, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good to be on the show, Todd.
You say that the evolutionary approach to our world leaves us in what you call a flatland of Darwinian reductionism. What does that mean?
Yeah, there's this wonderful book that was written in the 19th century called Flatland. It's by Edwin Abbott. And it's a kind of parable. It's set in this obviously fictional world that only has two dimensions. It doesn't have an up. The people there don't even have an understanding of the concept of up. But at one point, a three-dimensional being visits their world, and the main two-dimensional character just has no way to kind of grasp or understand the three-dimensional character. So I use that story, that image, to give a sense of what happens when somebody adopts a Darwinian worldview, and not just Darwinism, but that the whole materialistic framework that denies that there's any possibility for the supernatural. So that once that's gone, there's in a sense no up, there's no transcendent realm. And so that takes away an absolutely vital tool or category for understanding reality. So that when you look at, say, the beauty of the butterfly, or the majestic beauty of a sunset, or planet Earth taken from space, and you have this sense of the sublime, sense of beauty, even if you're maybe not a believer, the sense that there's something behind all that greater than just matter. Materialism denies that; it doesn't give you anywhere to go in that direction. So you're left to explain it away. Darwin worked very hard to explain away the instances of extravagant beauty in the animal kingdom. He even had a follow-up book to his seminal book, Origin of the Species, and that follow-up book was called The Descent of Man. And he added this whole kind of additional subsidiary theory called sexual selection to his natural selection theory, so they could explain away extravagant beauty like the beauty of the butterfly or the extravagant beauty of the peacock's tail.
You say that Darwin's theories and his, what he would have thought, a kind of very coldly rational way to look at the world, really are a part of a bigger philosophical movement at the time called reductionism. What is it? What does it do?
Yeah, it's reductionism is this drive to reduce reality, to insist that the essence of reality is found in the smallest constituent particles that make up anything. So you might, with a human being, you might say, well, humans aren't this whole being that's soul and body. Ultimately, they're just cells. Ultimately, they're just DNA. Ultimately, you might even go beyond that and say, ultimately, we're just atoms. We're just subatomic particles in motion. And so this sense that if you want to get to the core of reality, go to those smaller and smaller particles, and that'll give you the essence of reality. And you can see how that would flatten out all the things that kind of move us passionately about life, you know, good versus evil, you know, beauty, the sublime, you know, love, faith, courage. All those things disappear when you go to reduce things to their smallest physical particles.
So what was his approach? Let's just take the butterfly, for instance, as you do. How would Darwin have explained its extravagant beauty in some of the kinds of butterflies that we see? It's almost comical beauty and extravagance there.
Yeah, and this new documentary, Metamorphosis, it offers some beautiful photography of different kind of butterflies and how they develop in the different stages. It's truly amazing. What Darwin would have said is, well, the extravagance of the colors of their wings and that kind of thing, that evolved through a process of sexual selection when you had the male and the females being attracted to, and I'm not sure what exactly Darwin would have said, whether it was the males being attracted to the females or vice versa. But he would have said that they were attracted to the more colorful butterflies, so that, you know, maybe at first butterflies were extremely drab, but then you had a small evolutionary mutation that made one butterfly slightly more colorful, and then that butterfly became attractive and so was able to mate and reproduce and pass those genes on. It sounds good on the surface, but there's so much that it leaves unexplained. If you watch the film, it does a good job of boiling down the enormous hurdles that Darwinism faces and explaining how something like a butterfly with its different stages would have to go through to successfully evolve. The trick for Darwinism is that it's got to evolve a creature. If it's going to explain it in a Darwinian way, it's got to explain that evolution one tiny, tiny micro mutation at a time. Because even Darwin understood you couldn't have a mutation that suddenly created some highly sophisticated new machinery. Just like no one would expect, you know, a whirlwind to suddenly go into a garage full of old parts and create a 67 Mustang. It's got to be one tiny little step at a time, and in each step along the way, you have to have a fully functional creature that can survive and reproduce. Darwin didn't really solve that. He when it comes to things like the butterfly and a lot of other creatures, but he did manage to distract attention away from some of these more extravagant examples of beauty with this whole notion of sexual selection.
I mean, the analogy of the whirlwind in the garage coming out with a Mustang, given enough time, of course, and chance, Darwin would have said, well, it has to happen sooner or later with regard to the evolution of the species. But isn't Darwin's claim even more ridiculous than that? There's no garage. There's no, well, that maybe whirlwind might be there, but at the very best, there's iron ore there. And somehow, with enough time, there's a Mustang when evolution is finished. There are no parts.
Yeah,
there are no parts to work with in his theory.
Right. There's, you know, Darwin, if you back up the story, you just get into deeper and deeper problems. Darwin, in his time, most scientists thought simple life, a one-celled life form would be extremely simple, maybe like a little bag of Jell-O, about that complex. We now know that it's that even the most basic cell is extremely sophisticated, extraordinarily complex. The physicist Michael Dinton compared it to a micro miniaturized factory, far more sophisticated than what we have in our existing factories. And so that leaves a problem for Darwin, because the first cell, the first living cell, couldn't have evolved from simpler living cells because it was the first one. And so it had to appear suddenly. And then you go back from there and you have the whole problem of the Earth and its relationship to the solar system and the physical constants of the universe, which are finely tuned out to, you know, a degree that's, you know, if you say, well, what are the chances of our universe having just those right constants, just those right laws of physics, you end up with, you know, numbers, you know, one chance in 10 to the, and then you start piling on zeros, you know, one chance in a zillion billion, you know, on and on, so you can't even get your mind around it. And none of that, Darwin doesn't touch any of that. His theory can't explain why the universe just happens to be so perfectly ordered, so finely tuned that it even allows for life. So Darwin had a clever theory, but you mentioned that scientists, you know, try to explain the world as being purely materialistic, and I know what you meant by that. There are so many scientists out there that are pushing this materialistic agenda. The good news is, though, that there are many scientists, even some very prominent scientists, who reject all that. I mean, you have a guy like Arno Penzias, the Nobel laureate, who stated just very pointedly that he thought that this fine tuning of the universe pointed very directly to a supernatural plan. And you know, we could spend the rest of the half hour just quoting scientists, and some of them very prominent scientists, saying very similar things. So that's the good news. Don't ever buy if you have some professor or something saying, well, scientists understand or science understands that there's no evidence for the supernatural, there's no evidence for intelligent design. Don't buy it for a minute. There are a lot of scientists that disagree with that see the evidence for design.
Dr. Jonathan Witt is our guest. Another 10 minutes with him on this Friday afternoon, October the 7th. We're talking about Charles Darwin's response to beauty. Stay tuned.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Whether you are just starting or have played your entire life, Oak Brook Golf Club in Edwardsville is your home for golf. Our 27-hole layout, fair prices, and award-winning staff, and ever-improving course conditions make your decision easy. We have always been family-owned at Oak Brook, and golf is our business. Our PGA staff offers leagues, instruction, camps, a senior scramble, and our family special where kids play free. Oak Brook Golf Club, 618-656-5600 or oakbrookgc.com.
Theology for blue collar, white collar, and clerical collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Hi, this is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind.
All we are is dust in the wind.
Dust. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Witt of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture about Darwin's response, or actually his explaining away of beauty, not just extravagant beauty. I think it will ultimately lead Darwinists to have to explain away all beauty, period. Dr. Jonathan Witt is co-author of the books A Meaningful World and Traipsing into Evolution. He's also written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Darwin versus Beauty, Explaining Away the Butterfly. You'll find a link to the Discovery Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Someone says, look, what Darwin did was just kind of apply the cold, rational conclusion of investigation. Is his conclusion about beauty rational?
Absolutely not. Now, I don't want to go too far with that. I don't want to say that Darwin didn't use some of the tools of reason, of evidence gathering. But at the end of the day, he was committed absolutely to finding only theories or explanations that were consistent with materialism. In other words, he didn't want to consider a theory that would lead to intelligent design, that would point to a creator. And so he ruled out ahead of the evidence intelligent design. So you have to ask yourself, which is more rational, to follow the evidence wherever it leads, or to insist on only following the evidence to one possible set of conclusions? I think any kind of reasonable, fair-minded person would say, well, the more rational thing to do is to follow the evidence where it leads and to be open to the possibility of intelligent design. I don't think Darwin was.
You
and
say
certainly a lot, and certainly a lot of his followers today aren't. They've said as much.
You say that his theory of sexual selection to explain extravagant beauty doesn't actually explain it. It just shoves it off into a corner. What do you mean?
Well, a good example to help understand this is the tale of the peacock. Probably everybody's familiar with these big, extravagant tales that peacocks have, very colorful. And Darwin would explain that by saying, well, you know, the peahens, the females, were attracted to big, extravagant tails. So they would mate with the ones that had a little bit bigger tail, and so that would pass on that genetic difference. And so then peacock tails got bigger and bigger and more extravagant over the years, and that's how we ended up with these crazy big peacock tails that don't help them fly any faster. They almost certainly slow them down. They probably almost certainly make them more vulnerable to predators. But because of sexual selection, end up with these huge tail feathers. That leaves a question, though. How did we end up with peafowls, you know, peahens that have this completely impractical taste in peacocks? You know, why aren't the peahens? Well, why didn't natural selection give us peahens that selected their peacocks for how fast they were, how strong they were, how good they were in a fight, how quickly they could take off? Darwinism doesn't have an answer for that. You have an unexplained extravagance, a tendency toward extravagance that's not purely practical, that Darwinism at the end of the day doesn't explain. Now, if you have a view of the world that it was intelligently designed, that you have a creator that is an artist, that has other interests than always just making a bird, you know, the most efficient bird possible, the bird that can take off as fast as possible. He has other concerns, other interests. Then the extravagance of the peacock tail makes perfect sense.
Does Darwin ever make any attempt philosophically to explain kind of this universal concept of beauty, that there is beauty in the world that is also not even found in the animal kingdom? There, as you mentioned before, there's the sunset. How could this appreciation for beauty fit into a Darwinian view of natural selection only keeping those things and emphasizing those things that make for the survival of the fittest?
I think a Darwinist would probably say that, you know, these are when we experience beauty or we sense something beautiful, these are just a kind of knock-on effects of other skills that we have, you know, discerning color difference, detecting pattern, noticing when something seems healthy, so there's a balance, there's a symmetry. Well, the problem comes, of course, is when we have examples of people whose ability to discern these patterns and things outstrips to such an extraordinary degree anything that would seem to have any practical benefit in, you know, in the time, in the period, in the situation where humans are supposedly evolving. I mean, why would nature need to evolve the skills of, say, a Mozart or a Shakespeare or in the area of science, you know, the extraordinary mathematical insight and abilities of somebody, you know, like Albert Einstein? Darwinists have struggled with that. You know, it seems so extravagant, so beyond what natural selection would require. None of that's difficult to explain if you think that humans are the creation of an infinite being, or as the Bible teaches, that we are made in the image of God. Then it comes into focus and makes perfect sense.
So it sounds like Darwin can't explain why natural selection would prefer beauty in so many cases that it appears to do so. And as you say, and this requires a little more explanation, if you would, what he rules out, as you said before, what he rules out from the very outset is any notion of an intelligent designer. Is Darwin, are his followers essentially saying that they will not consider anything that does not fit into an atheistic framework?
There are Darwinists that try to reconcile Darwinism with theism. Francis Collins is one of them. If you go to a lot of our Christian universities and take a biology course, there's a good chance you'll have a professor that's going to try to reconcile Darwinism with theism, even with Christianity. But the kind of purist Darwinists, the ones that you know, were in line with Darwin himself on this, are going to say, no, we need to only consider material explanations. And if you try to bring in something supernatural, you're really being irrational. You're really defying the one of the basic core rules of doing science.
So doesn't a thoroughgoing Darwinist like that, as you say in your article, have to sit through a Beethoven concert or enjoy, well, can't really enjoy, a meal from beginning to end and say, look, it's just sound waves. It's just my eardrums vibrating. It's just my taste buds being stimulated electrically and chemically. There's nothing here. This is meaningless.
Ultimate. There's nothing ultimate here. I can enjoy it, but I can't pretend there's something transcendent here. Francis Schaeffer, and I'm telling this story from distant memory, but he tells the story of meeting a couple. I think it was on an ocean voyage, and the man was an agnostic or atheist, and he was clearly deeply in love with his wife or fiance, and at one point Francis Schaeffer is either tempted to tell the man or he actually does tell the man, do you understand that on your worldview that that deep feeling of love and passion that you have for your this woman are purely chemical, it's purely hormonal, there's nothing really there. And he wasn't trying to slap the man or insult the man, but he's trying to get the man to have a moment of realization, a moment of kind of common sense, where he said, you know what, I know absolutely for certain that the love I have for this woman isn't just chemical, it's not just hormonal, there's something deeper there. And that's the struggle that's what the materialist has to grapple with. And as Christians, if there's a way that we can gently or firmly or pointedly try to bring somebody that's living in this flatland to realize, no, there's something more there. There really is something transcendent, and it's worth opening our eyes to and exposing ourselves to and making ourselves vulnerable to. And a lot of people aren't going to be willing to open their hearts and minds to that, but hopefully some will. We've had some positive experiences of people, you know, seeing some of our work, some of our documentaries, and actually walking out and kind of changing their minds. So people can change their minds.
Dr. Jonathan Witt is Senior Fellow for the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, co-author of the books A Meaningful World and Traipsing into Evolution. He's written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Darwin versus Beauty, Explaining Away the Butterfly. Thanks for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
Folks, here's a way that you can help us equip the priesthood of all believers, as we do so often here on Issues Etc. It's our monthly or annual giving program called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Now, by joining the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, you'll receive premiums like I Have Issues t-shirts, books transcripts, broadcast transcripts. You can find out how to become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther there posting the 95 Theses, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Monday on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis about Father Abraham. Of course, Sunday the church will be remembering him, and Monday we'll be talking about his life according to those chapters of the book of Genesis. The beauty is there because our God is the source of beauty. Why should his creation be so extravagantly beautiful? Even from our perspective on this side of the fall, when much of the beauty has been worn off by the curse. Why? Because there is beauty in God. His creation will reflect that about his nature as well. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.